from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Hello, dear listener. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara.
We do the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show weekly here at KFNX. If you want to give us a call tonight, it's 866-536-1100. We're live. You can also go to our website, chat with us online, if and when I actually open up the chat room at chatterboxgameshow.com. I sound a little bit different this week. That's because I'm super sick.
A little nasally. The booming bass is not so present.
I thought it was the scratchy throat.
Sure, that too.
You may get to hear more improvised hacking and coughing and looging throughout the program.
If we're lucky.
I've got a button here that prevents you from hearing me.
But sure we won't use it at all.
You could hear me through your mic, though, if I'm not careful. So.
Well, I'm just getting over sickness, so.
I wonder where I got mine.
Yeah, I wonder too, but I hope I don't get it from you, so because I wouldn't want to be sick again.
You don't think perhaps you're immune to my particular strain?
No, not at all. But I'm glad that we're sitting orthogonally from each other, okay. So that our germ streams won't run into each other.
I actually left work early today, so I wouldn't make my coworkers sick.
Yeah, well, that's very valiant of you.
All right, well, in this state, I find it hard to concentrate, to recall things, to speak intellectually, all of the above.
So, look, I just use the word orthogonal, okay?
You're carrying
the
show today. this is rough. So I'm going to get into the chat room while I still can.
You know what I just realized?
No.
I don't know if anyone's ever actually used the word orthogonal like on the radio before.
You know what? That's possible.
I'm going to endeavor to use words that nobody uses on the radio. So if anyone in the chat room has some suggestions before I think of them.
All right. Well,
right. Because, like, there's no math radio shows, right?
No.
So, like,
yes.
They probably...
There's lots of math radio shows. What are you talking about?
Oh, silly.
Speaking of which, all
of those had all those right-wing radio stations.
Speaking of math, I want to tell you about a Google Reader blog post thing that my friend sent out earlier today. Like, just before the show, I read this. Apparently, and, you know, I didn't look into this deeply, so it could be totally fake. Either way, it's really funny. Apparently, there's a movement or a fake movement or an actual petition potentially to make 10 to the 27th power the official prefix for that large number. You know how there's like peta and yada and
right.
All that stuff?
Yeah.
So the official prefix for 10 to the 27th would be hella.
Okay.
So like the sun with a mass of 2.2 helatons would emit like 0.3 hella watts,
well,
something like that.
Sure, why not?
And then the subtitle on the blog post was, this is pretty awesome because when I say things are hella lame, it would work out to be
no.
Hella to the 10 to the 27th power, which is seriously lame. So
that would all of our slang would become suddenly much more precise.
So do me a favor and Google hella petition something. Maybe you'll come up with a result and become part of that because I would love for hella to be the official prefix. Well, to be anywhere in official science would be fantastic.
Nice.
Dude, that's hella lame.
All right, so back into some hella games.
Math radio, man. You
right.
Bring it up.
You know what? I have fantasies about talking about math on the radio. And that's why I use words like orthogonal. But anyway, so a lot has happened in this week already, and it's only Tuesday.
Just today.
Yeah, crazy.
Portal 2 alternate reality stuff.
Don't care.
It's interesting, sort of. And it's interesting that they're doing it themselves. That's the cool part. And they pushed a patch in order to accomplish it.
Okay.
And then this whole Infinity Ward thing, which I don't care about.
But I care about.
But you do.
So then it evens out.
Potentially.
Okay, so.
Since a lot more people seem to be in your camp than in mine.
Well, PS3?
PS3 apparently exploded. But not all of them. Only like 8 of the 11 different SKUs.
Only.
Yeah. 11 different
but
SKUs.
This was... I guess there's really nothing to say about it, right? Like, you just kind of maybe got a little screwed if you turned on your PS3 yesterday at some point.
For just a day. I guess it shares some sort of logic with the Zune that also failed.
Right, right. Yeah. They're saying maybe.
By the way, our chat room is totally dead. I didn't even realize it. Like, not nobody's there. Like, broken dead.
Well, that's pretty lame.
If someone's listening to the show, maybe they can fix that, because I have not been the IRC commander.
That's hella lame, in fact.
Hella lame. I've not been the IRC commander in many, many years, so I guess maybe Quakenet is down. I who knows? Anyway, moving right along. So, we want to talk about Portal 2?
Go ahead.
No, I don't care, man. I don't have that much to say. Apparently, they pushed out some sort of patch that involved some images and, like, some sort of sound files and stuff. I guess the sound files had Morse code in them.
I actually don't know anything about what's going on with that, so I just pretty much indiscriminately say I don't care about things I don't know
about. All of my news comes from, you know, RSS feeds and blog posts, so I don't know the full skinny on it either, but I guess they pushed out some patch that had a lot of media in it, and people are sucking up this media and interpreting it and transcoding it and whatever, and then there's, like, some other text somewhere that involved the main dude who started the company that got sucked up by the people who now Valve, right, who make Portal.
Right.
And so I it would be more interesting if I could tell you what it was that was funny. I just tell you it was funny that they included sound files that had Morse code, and then you interpret the Morse code, and it's just like some crazy crap. Do you remember the I Love Bees thing? Right? Like, it's as unintelligible as that.
I've tried to forget it, but yeah. So is this some kind of, like, augmented reality feature, or what's going on here?
The blog author was saying a lot of the information seemed to be as if it were written from the point of view of GLaDOS, or, like, perhaps it's things that are, like, GLaDOS rebooting. These are the words that might appear on the screen.
Okay.
Do you remember who GLaDOS or GLaDOS was?
Yeah.
All right, so that's for those who don't know about Portal. Portal, first of all, awesome game. You should play it. But the main antagonist in the game was this
passive-aggressive,
somewhat nebulous idea / floating ball in the level that would speak to you, and it was, you know, it was the system, right?
Am I right? Passive-aggressive tendencies?
Yes, definitely. Now there goes the cold again. So basically, the system would communicate with you, and it's represented by a floating ball throughout the stages that follows you around or leads you around. And very funny. That's part of what made the game awesome was GLaDOS. And so at the end, you defeat GLaDOS. And now there's this stuff that they're hiding in the game that makes it seem like GLaDOS is still alive, which is interesting because that's, like, the name of the song at the end of the game. And anyway, so now it's getting people excited that Portal 2 is around the corner. And there's really no other reason. It's not like this game content was put into the actual Portal game. It was put into the game folder, right? Like, where game stuff would be, but it's not part of the game. And so it's interesting to me this whole thing exists. Like, the concept of alternate reality in terms of games promotion is fascinating to me. And I Love Bees is the first reference that I have for it, which was, I believe, Halo 2. Am I right about that? I think Halo 2.
Like I said, I've very thoroughly erased it from my mind.
All right. Well, it was this alternate reality thing. And what's weird is, like, I Love Bees didn't seem to have any real connection to Halo 2 at all. Like, I don't know how it was related in any
fashion. Right, right. It's one of those weird viral creative
things. Yeah, but how did that connect? Like, maybe it connected to a painted patch you can put on your character as a bee, but, like, it didn't seem to have any other relevance. But I didn't follow it enough, so maybe someone who did knows the inherent relevance to Halo 2. But now you get something like this, which is much more related, right? It's specifically a patch for a certain game. And,
sure.
But it's done in a very interesting way, and I got to hand it to those people, whatever the name of their little group is that got sucked up by Valve. They do a good job. They're funny people, and well, I'm not going to read the post to you because I don't have it in front of me, but just trust me, it's good stuff. And go hunt it down if you're interested, but just the alternate reality concept in general to me, I find fascinating.
Yes.
And
so let's
fascinating how disjointed it is from the actual thing they're trying to promote, which I would never conceive of. And I do promotional stuff sometimes, and I have to come up with ways, and I'm like, no, this idea is too out there. It doesn't get people connected much, but
yeah. So let's talk about another idea that's kind of out there.
Okay.
There's this game, and they call it an online game. I don't even know if they actually use the word video game. But it's
called, what you were telling me before, it doesn't seem like it.
Right. It's called Evoke. Okay. And Evoke is, I guess, an alternate reality game where basically, it's I don't know. This is very confusing to me, but it's somehow a game that you access using some kind of online capable device, and it gives you challenges that encourage you to take on real life challenges, so to speak, that in ways, I guess, help your community or your neighborhood. And the example that's floating around is, oh, you know, if there's a challenge about famine, then you, if you give somebody food in your neighborhood who needs food, then you document it in some way through the game interface, and you get some kind of credit or currency or something in game terms. And eventually these add up to some kind of award that's real. So this is kind of interesting because, especially at DICE, which just happened recently, right? There's been a lot of talk about basically the social components of games, right? Completely overshadowing any kind of traditional video game interaction, right? And there was this one famous talk that somebody gave at the DICE this year, where he basically said, yeah, the big thing in games now is going to be, or in the future is going to be, you know, basically you know, social pressures and shaming people or motivating people to do things in order for them to avoid shame. Like, for example, you know, you have a farm in Farmville and you want to maintain it because it's very embarrassing if people come into your farm and see a distended farm, for example. Right. So right. I don't know how much I buy into that, because it just doesn't follow for me. I don't think that people play the games on Facebook and things like that mainly for those reasons specifically. But that's another story. But this Evoke thing, right? I mean, it's not really even like a video game at all. It sounds like it's just some kind of online activity, right? But the overarching issue that this and you know, that whole Farmville stuff and all these other things seem to get at is, and what I wanted to discuss is, these things seem to be pointing towards something, which is like, well, what if you had like some kind of currency, right? Like Microsoft Gamer Score, right? But it was more aggressively intertwined with things that you do in real life.
Can I read a description of this that I'm finding on,
sure,
on some website? On GameSet Watch, I guess there's an interview from McGonagall, Jane McGonagall. All right. So every week for 10 weeks, there's going to be a new episode in graphic novel form about social innovators working out of Africa. They travel around the world solving epic crises like food shortages, power outages in major cities. Players take on 3 missions a week. They learn, basically filling their brain with information about the topic. They act, doing something in real life to implement what they've learned, and they imagine, what could they do about this problem today if they had a team, money, and resources? That's what social innovation is all about, scaling up local solutions to make big, sustainable solutions that can spread. And the theory is, how do you build up global capacity to change the world in as short a time as possible for as many people as possible? I still don't get it. After reading that and listening to you, I still have no idea what it is.
It sounds cool, but is it video games?
No.
No.
We'll talk maybe a little bit more right when we get back.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. And we're talking about Evoke, which is an online game, but not an online video game.
I don't think it's an online game as much as it is a way to connect with people online. So it's not...
Well, this is funny.
The game does not take place online. The game takes place in real life,
right,
and in the words that you type in. I presume the words you type through as a story or recalling what you did... And you are communicating online.
Yeah. I'm a little baffled because this product is getting a lot of video game press in the blogs and such. But the more I look about it and think about it, I'm like, this is really just as detached as you could possibly get from video games.
Well, then why are we discussing it?
I have, well, it's but, just funny.
But let me tell you one thing that bugs me. I'm on the official site, which is urgentevoke.com. I click the About link, and it requires me to log in. Oh, no. I'm sorry. How to play. That was the one. It requires me to log in. I can't learn about how to play without getting a sign-on.
Well, clearly you need to this is some sensitive information there. They're not going to divulge to anybody.
Don't you think how to play should be the sort of thing that's on the About page? And when I go to the About page, there is a Learn How to Play section that apparently will teach me how to play. But I'm very confused with their UI here.
I don't know. Maybe they need commitment from you before they tell you how
Learn
to
the
play.
5 secrets of the Evoke network. I click on it. Oh, no, I have to log in. So you definitely have to log in to learn how to play.
So this is kind of cool. I wonder...
Sounds like a cult to me.
If it will get any traction.
Dude, who makes you sign up before telling you what it's about? Cults
multi-level marketing?
Yes. Exactly. That's what this is.
So let's move on. Let's go back to Infinity Ward.
Infinity Ward. So, okay. Big story, shrinkified. A couple of people were fired. Big deal.
Right.
People get fired from video game studios all the time.
Right. Okay. So here's that. This is true, and sometimes repeatedly in the course of a year. But anyway, so here's the angle I want to take on this. The first report of this issue from a viable, legit news outlet was on...
CNN broke this story?
No. I mean, legit in video game world, right?
Okay. So people like us.
Yeah. Was G4TV/MTV.com, right? So they had a blog post on their site about it. And it was... I mean... Okay, I'm not going to be the one who, like, holds video game reporters to super high standards, but the way that that report was phrased, it was just smacking all over the place of a ridiculous PR stunt. The way that they framed it, because they were basically like, oh, something's going on at Infinity Ward. We don't know what it is. All we know is that... bouncer types have showed up at the studio.
They did refer to them as bouncers.
Specifically, bouncer types. That was exactly the verbiage used.
That's just because one guy wanted to use those words, though.
Well, I'm sure, but that doesn't... I mean, like, okay, look. If somebody in, like...
Didn't you feel like you were on the receiving end of a text message from behind a hostage situation?
No, I felt like I was on the receiving end of I Love Bees 2 or whatever, okay? So that in and of itself, and then they said, oh, and the heads of the studio can't be found, ha ha ha, and it's just like the way that because they used those words, it just sounded exactly like what kind of PR stunt are they coming up with, right? Which is completely not what happened. Of course, it was not a PR stunt. What happened was that the two heads of Infinity Ward were basically fired, let go, whatever.
And they said for some sort of breach of contract or something, right?
So officially, of course, they don't discuss why, but there was an SEC filing that Activision made recently. And they specifically mentioned some senior employees of Infinity Ward and how there were breach of contract or insubordination issues. And they expected there to be litigation.
Insubordination from Infinity Ward? Like, that's about as characteristic of that company as you could imagine. Like, they're all about telling everybody to F off.
Well, pretty much. And they did. And I guess that's what happened.
So if you're that kind of guy, don't sell out to a large publisher if you want to keep your job anyway.
I guess. Well, we don't know the reality of what happened. And of course...
No, but it's my job to completely speculate and make these things up for sensationalistic purposes.
Of course. Once we get that disclaimer out of the way, we can go hog wild.
Yeah. Now, if you want to sell out to get all the money and then lose your job so you get the pity of everybody, but then you have a bunch of money and you don't have to work, like that really sounds like the sweetest deal to me. So maybe they had a plan the whole time. But maybe not, since it seems to be unexpected.
Yeah. So... based on scouring various blogs and comments, right, what I've been able to glean from this situation is that, you know, it sounds like the crux of the matter was Infinity Ward. Infinity Ward, actually, they had a contract to do Call of Duty games until...
The end of time.
No, not the end of time. Actually, this October, October 2010. And the rumor had it that Activision was like, okay, you guys got to S out this game by October. Right? And they're like, we don't want to do it.
They've never made a game back-to-back year after year.
Rumors.
Okay. Right?
And rumors they didn't want to do it, which obviously makes sense. If you want to do a game right, you got to spend the appropriate amount of time to do it right. But they also...
Not just 1 year.
Well, yeah.
Which is or, how much time that would have been.
Right, basically. They also didn't want another studio to do the game, right? And so they were against and they were trying to stop.
Joke's on them, though, because Treyarch's not the only one making a Call of Duty game. I read some headline earlier that some other company I'd never heard of.
Well, this is exactly what happened all at about the same time, right? So there's Sledgehammer Games, which
That's
is a
the
newly,
one.
Newly formed studio, right? But also, I think they're owned by Activision, too.
No chance a newly formed studio is going to do anywhere remotely close to the job that Infinity Ward can
do. Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that that they won't. But basically, due to the fallout that happened today... you know, Infinity Ward's not going to do the next COD game. Sledgehammer Games is going to do it. So they took it away from Infinity Ward. They gave it to Sledgehammer Games. And I guess we'll see what's going to happen.
Luckily, neither of us care because we don't even play that game.
Well, yeah, it's not exactly on my playlist.
But, I mean, what's funny is well, I don't know if it's funny, but what's interesting to me is... just how big a deal this is right now. It's two guys got fired from a video game company.
Yeah, well, not just two guys, right? The people who ran the company who have been there for 8-9 years.
I mean, I guess it's news. And, I'm happy that they told me that some media outlet got the information to tell me, but like people are just going on and on about this, and like I guess it means you're not going to get another Call of Duty game, right? Not another good one, right? But I'm sure you're still going to get good stuff somewhere. And what is kind of surprising to me is that the Infinity Ward employees haven't walked as well. And I imagine tomorrow we'll get notice of a bunch of people who put in their own notice.
That would be interesting. Actually, another component of this whole thing is that apparently, and this is once again another rumor, the heads of the studio were talking to other studios about things that they were supposedly not supposed to talk about.
I hadn't read that part.
So, yeah, I read that one. There was another rumor going around about...
but they all get pretty drunk, so, you know, they might have just blurted it out.
Right. Well, sure.
I guess his Twitter said something about drinking and enjoying unemployment or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely... The facts are undeniable, right? They've been... They're not there anymore. They've been let go, so...
Now, how important is the lead of the company at this point, though? Like, they're not coding... The CEO guy or whatever he is.
It's hard to say because I think for some studios and some projects, people in those positions are absolutely paramount and of importance, and on other ones, not so much. It just depends on the culture of the company.
It's surprising, though. Like, if they were working on the game to get rid of the two guys, and, like, usually you get rid of two troublemakers so that the status quo may continue.
Right.
Right? But that's not the case. Or, they dump the people and the whole thing.
Or maybe it is.
I don't know. Well, let's talk about something a little bit different when we get back.
Hey, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
And my scratchy throat is back on the radio. I gotta tell you, of all the days we have done this program when I didn't want to do it...
Yeah, this is the best one?
I think this one wins.
All right.
This one wins where me, with me just wanting to be not here every minute of the program, which is fantastic for your listeners to hear. I bet it makes them feel wonderful.
It makes me feel great. Totally.
Yeah. It is just, you got to understand. You can hear me. I do not like being sick.
You're fine.
Do you like being sick?
Love it.
I bet our listeners do not like.
You know how like on some cartoons and stuff, like they draw some like cartoon characters with like the eyelids halfway open constantly?
Yeah.
That's you right now.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Dude, you should have seen me get out of my car and walk into this station. I just couldn't do it.
Well, I thank you for your dedication, and I'm sure all our listeners do.
Oh, you are very welcome, sir. I need a cookie.
Okay, so before we get to cookies, I want to talk about game credits.
Game credits. This is something you've been wanting to discuss for a while.
Yes, I mean, for a while, right, like my normal pile of stuff. The topic of game credits is more involved and interesting than you could ever imagine.
I find that hard to believe. Is it as interesting as shoving a tissue up my nose?
Even more interesting than
we
that.
We really got to start taking pictures in the studio.
That'll be fantastic.
All right, I'll try not to interrupt.
And also, you know, like the whole half eye thing, you also got these wonderful dark rings that make you look very sinister.
Awesome.
Yeah. And the tissue in the nose kind of counteracts that sinister look, but I'll excuse it. So
credits. Why are they important?
So there's a couple of interesting things that I wanted us to talk about with regards to video game credits.
Like, I can understand. I want credit so I can get another job down the road. You can say, hey, yeah, I'm in the credits of whatever game it is that I'm in.
Sure. So you ever looked in the back of a video game manual and you look at the credits, right? And there's like no titles. There's like just a list of 50 people, right? You ever seen one of those? Just say yes.
I'll say yes, but usually they have titles, and then there's a section that has. I just figure there's a title on one page, but then there's so many names after it that are all like special thanks to
the next 100 people. We're not counting special thanks. But
then no.
Often, right? It's not uncommon to see, for example, if not the whole studio, just listed out without any titles. They might do like divisions, broad divisions in design. Like all designers are under design, and all programmers are under programming. And there's no distinction between like seniority or title or anything like that. Now, why is it? Do you think that they do this?
To keep people from wanting a raise.
It's
that's a good guess, right?
It's actually to keep people from getting sniped by headhunters, because apparently what some headhunters started to do, and for those listening, by headhunter I don't mean like Aboriginal tribesmen, I mean
someone wanting a good employee at their own company,
right? Recruiters, in other words.
Yes.
Is that apparently headhunters would get a habit of, oh, I need a character animator. Oh, let me just look at the credits for these names. Oh, these are the character animators, right? So I just look up the company, find the number, go to the company directory by calling it, and call up these people directly. This is how this happens. And so in order to counteract these forces...
Isn't the proper way to counteract that force to just make people happy at their jobs?
You would think this! Yes. So it does seem a little backwards and insidious.
Give them free cereal in the mornings and give them a pay.
You'd think that the best way to retain employees is to give them sufficient incentive to stay and be happy there. But
Google employees don't leave very often.
But, well, this is true. And there's a lot to be said for that. But I guess if you're not able to do that, then you need to do underhanded tactics like this. So that's kind of lame. I think it's kind of lame because also it doesn't allow it doesn't really like properly document someone's contribution to the game, right? I mean, if somebody was like a lead designer, right? Like, I believe they should be properly credited as lead designer, not just in a big list.
Yeah, no, I can understand that, but I mean, I'm sure, isn't there still a list somewhere? Doesn't somebody know?
Well, somebody knows, right?
Like,
but
the credits within the game that are played at the end of the game,
right,
could be fully vetted, right? Because, you know, the headhunters aren't exactly
they're not smart enough to play the end of the game.
Well, they're not going to play it for 20 hours just to find out who made it. They got other stuff to do.
Yeah. So
That'd be hilarious. They'd put a note at the bottom. Yeah. If you want to know who really did what, you got to play the game.
Yeah. So here's another interesting fun fact about credits. You ever seen in some credit lists where they'll say there'll be like a design section, right, or like a programming section, and then there'll be another smaller list at the end of these respective sections that'll say like additional programming.
Yes.
Or additional contributions or whatever.
And I figured that was when they hire out another company to do some stuff.
No. These are the people who worked there for part of the project, but not long enough as deemed by whoever makes that decision for the credits. And very often, they're people who basically took off before the end of the project.
Someone's working on game A,
right,
while game B is being made. Game A finishes, they go work on game B for a little bit until they go start working on game C. Well, they just sort of helped, lended their talents for a short period.
It could be that, but also what I was trying to get at was they could be working on game A for studio A, right? And then it'd be like, oh man, I hate this place. I'm taking off. I'm Audi 5000, right? And
studio A gets pissed off.
And yes, so what happens a lot of times is that, you know, whoever makes the decisions about who gets what credit in the credits will often, as punishment for leaving the project prematurely, either relegate their status to additional, or sometimes even worse, in some cases, they just take you off the credits altogether.
That's pretty uncool to not put you on the credits at all if you contributed to it.
Yeah, and I'm kind of two minds. I'm a little split about this because on the one hand, you know, if you're in a project that you're totally committed to and you're, you know, working with a team of people and somebody's like, hey guys, you know, oh, I got this better thing. I'm going to totally ditch you guys. See you. Good luck. Right. Like that kind of stinks, you know?
Well, yeah, that's the kind fact of is they contributed.
Indeed, they did, right? But I'm just talking through...
Now, what would be hilarious is if they went through the code, found the code that guy made, and ripped it out just so they could screw him. But it seems like it would be... Like, I'm sure there's no law on the books about this, but like it seems to me like it would be wholly unethical, if not like breaking some sort of contractual arrangement in terms of your employment, to leave you off of credits if something that you produced was put into the final product, regardless of how much you were involved.
I do think it's unethical not to give you a credit at all. I think that you should get some credit if you should get credit proportional to the amount you worked on the game. I think that that's fair.
So what do they do? They put in the pictures of the people who made it, and like if you worked on it a lot, then you get a really big picture?
Well, no. It doesn't go that far. But
Media Molecule has their pictures in there.
Well, yeah.
A little big
point. Yeah, they just got bought by Sony, by the way.
Yeah, that's one reason it was in the top of my mind.
So, I mean, there's some studios, and some time ago there was a media story about Codemasters having a reputation for basically, if you ditch our project in the middle of the project, we're going to leave you off the credits. And
well, they used to be a totally fake company.
What's that?
Like they're
not totally fake. What do you mean?
They would make like unlicensed cartridges, and they would jack on extra like multiplayer adapters into their cartridge, like make
this
games.
This is like NES days you're talking about here.
Sega Genesis, what I'm thinking, but yeah, they would make games in the $5 bin. Like the MSRP was never more than $5. Like those games that nobody buys that involve some main character that's an egg, literally an egg.
Yeah.
Like,
well. But
you know what I'm talking about.
That was during
Codemasters.
The time when I didn't think they were Codemasters. That was kind of a funny name, but they've made much better products since then.
Like Pete Sampras Tennis was all right for the Sega Genesis. But other than that, they never made anything good until like lately they started making your grind or grid or floating tires game, whatever that is.
Yeah.
What was that called?
I have no idea.
It starts with a G and an R and there's cars, rally sports. You know what I'm talking about.
No.
Everything Colin McRae was Codemasters, right?
Yeah, sure.
How can you not? You've brought this game up 50 times on the show.
Oh, Grid?
I did say Grid.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good game.
Right, so Codemasters totally came out from behind to make stuff that didn't totally suck.
No, lately they've, in the past decade, yeah, they've made some really awesome games.
Yeah, but all I remember is when I first heard about them, they had the worst logo, and I just thought they were totally...
Yeah, well, it's hard to take a word Codemaster seriously when your game is about an egg.
Yes.
But that's behind them now.
Okay. Kind of like Epic in their shareware days?
Sure, kind of.
Everybody thinks fondly of Epic.
Yeah.
They don't think fondly of Codemasters and their eggs.
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's kind of a tough issue because, like, I just think it's totally uncool for people to leave in the middle of a project.
But admittedly, I think this hits you a little bit more than it hits any one of our listeners.
Well, this is true because I've been, excuse me, very often the guy.
I'm totally spreading.
Who sticks to the end of the project because I'm dedicated and I believe in it and... You know,
have you been screwed by the lump of dump
and people go,
crediting?
I haven't. Let's see. I don't believe I have, actually. No. I haven't. But I know that there's like.
Then what's the trouble?
It's an interesting topic. I don't have to be personally subjected to it for it to exist and
okay.
for us to talk
I mean,
about.
It sounded like you were going to relay some story of personal pain.
Well, there have been times, right, where. When people leave on a project, it just sucks, you know? And it's different for – I mean, it's different in every case to varying degrees, right? But, you know, you wish in an ideal world that, you know, everyone can start the project together and finish the project together. But there's extenuating circumstances and
– Also, certain jobs are needed throughout the development.
Well, yeah. And in fact, you know what? Like, some people have good reasons for leaving. And in a lot of cases, you know, if I was under the same – situation, maybe I would do the same thing too if, you know, if an awesome opportunity came up in the middle of the project. But I don't like it.
We have another break. Excuse me for a moment while I hack up a lung. We will be right back to end the program.
And we're back. For the final segment of the Coffalicious Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
This is when it gets exciting. This is when we mention our sponsor, UAT.edu. That's the University of Advancing Technology. We mention it over a cough coming through the microphone. So I'll say, there it is.
Very nice.
I'll say it one more time. University of Advancing Technology, our fantastic sponsor at UAT.edu. Check out what they've got to offer. I did, and I wasn't sick for most of the time I went there. It was fantastic. All right, so demos. We got a lot of demos happening lately, right? So I played Heavy Rain a couple weeks ago. You played Heavy Rain a couple weeks ago. God of War 3 is out now.
Yeah, guess how big the God of War 3 demo is.
Demo. Should I guess because I know how long, or should I pretend I don't know? By you asking me, I would instinctively want to guess a very short amount.
You know or you don't know?
Well, you were saying, let's talk about 90-minute demos.
Right.
So I'm guessing it's 90 minutes.
No, actually, the Darksiders was a 90-minute demo, but not 90 minutes to download.
But that's probably because Darksiders sucks. But God of War 3...
Just guess.
I'm going to guess 15 minutes.
No, in size.
How
long does it take to download?
Oh, 1,300 megs.
2,600
I was exactly half. I was exactly half.
It's like 2.5 gigs, give or take.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's gigantic.
Since my internet's been totally sucking at night lately, that is insane because I would never be able to download it.
Good luck. Good luck downloading that one. But so that was kind of funny. But the real thing I wanted to talk about was in an unprecedented move, right? The Darksiders demo, which just came out.
I still don't know what Darksiders is about.
It's an action game, kind of like Dante's Inferno / God of War style.
Seriously, another one.
Kind of, sorta.
Another one at the same time.
I'm not. They're not exactly the same type of game. That's just like the genre, right?
So hacky slashy.
Yeah. So in an unprecedented move, they've advertised this demo as being extra long, 90 minutes long, right? It's like basically like the entire first level of the game. There's like more than one boss, right?
So totally enough for me to play it and never need to play it again.
Well, see, this is the point I was going to make, is that there's I think there's a danger. It's touchy. Excuse me.
Let it out, man. I know what it's like.
to make a demo so in-depth. Because on the one hand, right, you could argue that if the demo is long enough, right, then it should be long enough for the player to get so hooked on it, right, that they've just got to buy it now, right? And if they play for an hour and a half or maybe 2 hours, right, then they're just hooked, and that's just a guaranteed sale right there, right? On the other hand, right, there's the flip side of the argument, which is if you give somebody so much playing time for free, that will just take them away from doing things that cost money.
So,
or buying your product.
I'm thinking back to other games that actually induced sales through this demo model. And I know what happens these days, but back in the day, it wasn't as common. So, like, the first time I came across a game that was very shareware and like, people I knew were actually buying it was Wolfenstein. And that represented, a huge leap in technology. And we all know that, like, first-person shooter stuff had existed prior
but
that was the first major exposure of it to me and to a lot of people.
And Doom was, like, even more major than that. Yeah.
And they gave you a huge portion of the game. But it was also a huge technology jump. And so that was like, I never needed to buy it because I got so much of it. But I think, generally speaking, a demo can be really short if it's showing off something that totally wows you. Like this the graphics or the sound or the immersive nature of the sandbox gameplay or some crap that is really amazing for whatever time it comes along in the universe. You can have a really short demo and induce people to play it if it amazes you somehow. And if it's just maybe a good story and you need to get into it and involved to get sucked in,
right,
it needs to be a longer demo. So I'm gonna hazard a guess, telling you otherwise I know nothing about this game. Hazard a guess that it's fairly mediocre in terms of its presentation and probably needs you to really feel the story out and involve yourself in it. Maybe even have a save amidst the demo. In order for that 90-minute demo to make sense. And so maybe that's why they did it, because it's not blowing you away off the bat. It takes that time to get into it.
Maybe. The interesting thing about a lot of games, though, is that, and we've kind of touched on this in previous shows, there's a lot of things about gameplay that you have to invest time into before you're able to perceive it or apprehend it. No matter how amazing, there's just certain things, right, where it just has to, you just have to experience it for a certain amount of time before it can be amazing, you know? There are things like graphics, right? Yeah, you can wow someone with graphics. Things like the depth of a certain combat system, right? Maybe will take longer for somebody to figure out, oh, this is really amazing, right? Because it takes time to basically learn it, you know? Like, chess might be awesome, right? But you can't convince somebody of the awesomeness of chess with, four moves into a game, right?
So how long was the Red Planet demo?
The Red Star, you mean?
Red Star, whatever.
Well, it's probably a few minutes.
Wait, was it the whole first level?
It was, we made an E3 demo level, which is probably, I'm going to guess, maybe 5 minutes long. Maybe a little longer. Between 5 and 10 minutes.
And the demo level was what level of the game?
It was the first level of the game.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was pretty short, though.
Relatively short, right.
Okay. And any idea how that fared? Like, did you think, oh, I wish we could have made the demo longer?
Well, we deliberately made the demo to showcase multiple aspects of the game, right? Because we knew that...
I would figure your demo would want to show the top-down and the side view.
But right.
That's not what happened.
Well, it kind of does in some parts, right? But basically, it was deliberately built in order to show the player the breadth of what the game could offer, right? So there's, you know, melee moments, there's... you know, the shooting moments, there's different kinds of enemies. We wanted to basically do what a good demo does, which is give you a good impression of overall what the game's like in a short amount of time.
Did you think you succeeded with that?
I think that as much as we could do with an experience that lasts, you know, let's say 10 minutes, yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Now I'm curious about E3 demos in general. Like, do they give you some sort of guidelines? Like, your demo should be this amount of
No, not at all.
You get your kiosk, you do whatever the hell you want with your kiosk.
Pretty much. I mean, I will say this, right? I don't think that it would have made the game better if the demo was any longer. Or I don't think that it would have been any more effective if it was longer.
I didn't know the chance your game didn't come out for 2 or 3 years or something.
So, this is
a unique situation, though.
Right.
Okay, so Darksiders really long, but it's actually gotten quite a bit of hype, this game, so maybe people are going to like it. But does it give you any other impressions? I mean, do you differ from my opinion?
I haven't actually played it, so I'm not going to say that the game probably sucks or doesn't suck. But
I mean, just knowing that the company's giving you 90 minutes of this, like, if you were part of this group that made the game, like, would you be upset about that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know how it's going to fare. You know, I mean, it sounds like this is an experiment, right? And they're trying to see if a 90-minute demo does any better than a standard-length demo.
So who's publishing this game?
And, well, it's a THQ game.
Okay. THQ, they made a lot of games, but they haven't done a lot lately.
This is actually one of the most accoladed games that THQ has published in recent memory.
I should point out, if this is anything like God of War, they already made their God of War clone. Their Conan the Barbarian game.
Was that THQ?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean, I've been wrong before, but I'm pretty sure that was a THQ game. Right.
Well, don't call it a God of War clone, because...
That was. This might not be. I have no idea what this is like. I mean, it was an all-right God of War clone, too, the Conan game.
Yeah.
But it wasn't fantastic. Darksiders, you're right, though. I've seen a lot of press on this. We talked about how Playboy likes to do games-related stuff, and they did for this game.
Yes.
Anyway, as we go, everyone, I want to thank you for pushing through listening to my horribly scratchy voice, and I also want to influence you as your host to go to uat.edu, the website for the University of Advancing Technology, because, well, we want to make sure you do that, because they pay the bills around here. So we're going to be back next week. Hopefully I will be more healthy.
And I will also be more healthy.
And that means we will also be more happy. So stay with us. Tell us your ideas for shows or things you want us to talk about. Feel free to call us next week. Whatever you want.
Things that piss you off. Things that I say that piss you off.
You'll find emails on the website at chatterboxgameshow.com. In the meantime, enjoy yourselves. We will be back next week.
Good night, guys.
Listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.